100% born in the Appalachian Mountains and made in the USA, Timber Ninja Outdoors provides a range of mobile hunting options to accommodate diverse hunting preferences. Whether you prioritize comfort, lightweight design, or versatility, their two-panel and single-panel saddles collection has something for everyone. The Black Belt Nano is the lightest single-panel saddle available on the market, weighing in under a pound. The saddle is designed with the minimalist hunter in mind, focusing on lightweight functionality and breathability. One notable feature is the patent-pending magnetic stick clip system on the side, which allows for convenient transportation of sticks up the tree, as well as a built-in platform holder. The Nano saddle can be folded up to the size of a Nalgene bottle, enabling easy portability. With a four-way stretch material on the back for a comfortable fit, as well as strategically placed padding for hip pinch relief, you can use code EASTMEETSWEST to get free shipping on any Timber Ninja order. If you try it out and don't like it, send it back within 30 days for a full refund. Learn more at TimberNinjaOutdoors.com and sign up for their email newsletter for exclusive discounts and product drops. When it comes to optics, I get the same question over and over again. What are the best all-around binoculars? Well, it's tough to find something that works in every condition great, but after using a pair of Maven B1.2 10x42s, I think I found them. They feature an 8x or a 10x option, superior low light performance, tack sharp edge-to-edge clarity, a generous depth of field, and a silky focus mechanism. All of Maven Optics have a lifetime no-fault warranty and hail from the great state of Wyoming. I've been using Maven Optics since I bought my first pair in 2017, and I think you should test them out for yourself. Head over to mavenbelt.com and use the code EASTMEETSWEST-GIFT for a free gift with any full-price optics order. For all of those that want a truck bed cover for work or play, Diamondback makes the top-of-the-line, heavy-duty covers that help you do more with your truck. They're perfect for the truck-owning, avid sportsmen, outdoor enthusiasts, and weekend project warriors. I'm currently using the HD cover that is capable of holding up to 1,600 pounds on the top. And then I have the Yakima Overhaul HD bars on top so I can put my rooftop tent on it. When I'm not using my rooftop tent and able to use the trifold design of the Diamondback, I have the Crossbin 8 in there to organize all of my stuff in the back of my truck bed. Diamondback is made right here in Phillipsburg, Pennsylvania. If you want to check them out, head over to diamondbackcovers.com. If you've wanted that hunting camp tradition that we talk about, that experience, but you don't have a hunting camp of your own, you're welcome to come stay at my hunting camp up here in the Pennsylvania Wilds called the Elk Crossing Getaway in the PA Wilds. So if you go over to Airbnb, you can check out our three-bedroom, one-and-a-half-bath house that's right in the heart of Pennsylvania elk country. It's only minutes away from a bunch of public land to be able to hunt, hiking trails, outdoor recreation, fishing, all of those things there. The house is completely fully stocked with everything that you need to be able to spend a week hunting deer, taking your family up to see the elk, anything like that. So if you head over to Airbnb and search Elk Crossing Getaway in the PA Wilds, you'll find my listing there and you can rent out my house. Send us a message, an inquiry that you're interested in it and mention that you heard it on the podcast here. Then we'll get you 10% off of your first stay.
Are you an adventurer looking to take your hunt to the next level? Then you're in the right place. Welcome to East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the East Meets West Hunt podcast presented by Spartan Forge. On today's episode, I am joined by Chris Toomey and my brother Kurt Martonic. The three of us have traveled to hunt in many different states using our vehicles as base camps. With three different truck or vehicle camping setups, we discuss what has worked for us, what hasn't, what we would change, and the specific gear used for making truck camping work on hunting trips. On this week's Mountain Buck Monday Story of the Week, we have a story coming from Tristan Roman out of Pennsylvania. Tristan wrote in, "I really enjoy the podcast. This is a rifle hunt that took place on public land in the mountains of northern Pennsylvania. It happened on the third day of rifle season and the final day of hunting for everyone in our camp that trip. My season up until this hunt had been a roller coaster, to say the least. I truly believed I had done my homework correctly. I was prepared to settle for any good buck, but really had my hopes set on a big 8-point I had seen in the area the week prior during bear season. I hunted the first 2 days and saw nothing except a couple of does the opening morning, which really made me question my faith in my scouting efforts. I'd also missed 2 mature bucks with the bow in a different state just 2 weeks prior. So as you could imagine, my confidence slash morale was at an all-time low. Come Monday evening, I was exhausted. I decided rather than making the 2.5-mile trek back into the spot I had been hunting, I was going to make it less grueling on myself and watch a clear cut that was only about 0.5 mile from the road. I didn't completely lack confidence in the spot, as there were multiple fresh rub lines leading into the cut, but I did have trouble with the notion that a decent buck was going to move in daylight that close to the road on the third day of rifle season. At about 4:15 p.m., with a solid 45 minutes of daylight left, I saw the body of a deer standing in the clear cut staring at me 80 yards away. There was no doubt the deer was already aware of my presence. I slowly raised the gun, and in the scope I could see his bases, so I knew it was a buck. I couldn't tell, however, if he was legal. He turned to walk back into the cut, but as he turned, I could see the right side. It was the big 8. All I had was his neck in about 0.5-second window to get a shot off. I pulled the trigger, and he went down. I was overcome with emotion. This was the first time in history of our camp that everyone hunted the same area, so getting to share that with all of our guys was really special. Earlier that day, we had also gathered in the creek behind our camp to spread the ashes of a camp owner slash family member who recently passed. I had asked him for some help that night while I was in the tree, and I have no doubt that he heard me. I have no doubt myself that he heard you there. And man, that's an awesome story to be able to have, and especially after the roller coaster of a year. And as many of us don't like to admit, we have situations where you may miss deer or have a bad season and things just don't work out the way you planned. And for me personally, I think that the important part is just to keep going and keep grinding and trying to be able to recover from it. And I think you definitely were able to do that, Tristan. So congratulations on this buck. If anybody wants to check it out, head over to East Meets West Hunt on Instagram or East Meets West Outdoors on Facebook. Check out the Big 8 and be able to check those out. And if you have a story of your own, a mountain buck story, send it in to my email, bo@eastmeetswesthunt.com. And I'd love to be able to share it with the audience going forward. Still have a ton that are coming through. I mean, this one was submitted quite a while back, and I'm just getting through them. There's so many stories coming through, and I love it being able to see it and share it with everybody. So thank you for that. Couple quick updates before we get into this podcast. I am now currently back from Alaska for my moose hunt. There'll be a podcast coming out, I believe, next week to give a full rundown on that. So I'll save all the details of that hunt where I spent 2 weeks in Alaska and a DIY trip flying for moose with a good buddy of mine, Ethan Demai, and Justin Mueller with the camera there. So I'm excited to be able to release that episode coming up here. And in other news, I still have the Sitka and EMW hat promotion going on. So basically, that is where if you go over to my website, just go to eastmeetswesthunt.com/shop, and you make any purchases that are over $60, excluding shipping, you get a free East Meets West logo hat that is on a Sitka either subalpine or elevated 2 hat. Make sure that you put it in the notes which camo pattern that you would prefer on the order. So right when you go to put the order in, there's a spot for notes. Put that in there if you want subalpine or elevated 2, and I will send that out. Now, we are getting really low on stock of these, so I don't know how much longer that's going to go on. So definitely make sure that that if you're interested in that, you take advantage of it and go through it. So it's also Sitka's mid pro style. So similar to like a Richardson 112 hat, They got mesh on the back, and the front has the camo on it. And then there's a leather patch on the front with the new East Meets West logo. So far it's been great. I had a lot of these hats, and they're going pretty fast. So I appreciate all of the support there and everyone liking to be able to check those out. In other news, I'm starting to do a new weekly Q&A podcast. So just during hunting season here, I'd done this kind of with what I called Mountain Buck Monday podcast a while back, a couple years ago. I think it's been since I've done it. But I think I'm going to release these on Fridays now. So I'm still planning some of these out. But I had announced it about a month ago, and I've got some questions that have come in. And then I've also taken questions from the past that I've got and looked at trends to be able to find what are some of the most asked questions. And these podcasts are going to be in addition to the regular weekly episode, but it's only going to be 10 to 20 minutes long. So I'll cover one to two questions per episode, just kind of giving my opinion on it and my feedback with it to be able to do this. It'll be an audio only episode that's coming out. I'm not putting the video version up on YouTube, so it's just going to be audio only. I've been wanting to do this and struggling to figure out how to allocate the time to edit all the video stuff and put all that together. And I was like, you know what? I'll just go back to doing just an audio for this version. And for you guys that are listening on Spotify or Apple or wherever you're listening to it at. So I appreciate all the support there. And I'd love to get feedback on it and also submit your questions. The best way to submit your questions is to my email, bo@eastmeetswesthunt.com. And make sure you put it in the title line or the description of the email that it is for the podcast questions or the weekly Q&A podcast. Make sure you put that in there. It's easier for me to be able to go through my emails and find those and categorize them and make sure I pull out your guys' questions and try to be able to answer them to the best of my abilities based on my feedback or my experiences. So these by far are not rules or laws or anything of deer hunting, but for me, this is just giving my opinion, and that can be taken however you want with it. So those will be starting here. I believe the first one's October 6th. That's going to go out. So that's coming up soon. And lastly, I just want to thank you again for listening to the podcast, supporting everything that comes along with it. If you find value in any of these episodes, podcasts, share them with your friends, share on social media. And, if you want to, if you find it valuable, and then also just, if you would just take 30 seconds of your time and wherever you listen to it, give a rating and review. That helps out so much. Now, Spotify doesn't allow you to write a review, but you can give 5 stars if you think that it's valuable. But Apple Podcasts allows you to write a review with it as well. And I may even go through some of those reviews and stuff and be able to send out some hats to some people that are giving reviews too. So I appreciate that so much. It helps out with the episode. But anyways, I've rambled on enough here for this one. I hope you enjoy this podcast with Chris Toomey and Kurt Martonic. All right, we're live. We got some nice little mixtures here, some old fashioned. What is this? On the Rocks Premium Cocktails by Knob Creek. Old fashioned. Me and Chris got the old fashions. Kurt's got the Manhattan. I don't know. Kurt raided my liquor cabinet, and that's what he came up with.
Pretty good.
It looks like a Christmas gift for sure, don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think it'll work.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be my first choice, but.
Is it good?
It's all right, yeah.
Yeah, it's not bad. I don't do. It's probably not as strong as I normally do it, but, you know.
I don't know if I've ever had a Manhattan, so this is.
Really?
Yeah. I usually like old fashions, but.
It's just, don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure that the old, or the Manhattans just don't have the sugar and like the fruit in it. That pretty sure it's just bitters and bourbon.
I won't quote you on it.
Is that wrong?
I don't know.
Because I remember I'd be like, I was talking about at home making, I call them redneck old fashions, and I was telling people what I put in it. And it was just like bitters and bourbon or whiskey, and they're like, that's a Manhattan. And I'm like, oh,
Okay, well, I guess I'm making Manhattans. So, I don't know. But anyways, so I'm joined here on my back porch. This podcast is not going to go out right when we're recording this. We're recording the end of August, although it does feel like October out here with my brother, Kurt Martonic, Kurt the Gunsmith, and then a good buddy, mutual friend of ours, Chris Toomey. And I think Chris, cool, Chris has been on here quite a few times now, honestly. You were on in the very early days, first year of the podcast, elk hunting with me and my dad. We used to do the day-by-day hunt trips.
Yep, broadcasting live from...
Yeah, and that was actually like...
Should I say that?
No, you shouldn't say that.
All right, sorry.
Editors, cut that out, please. Thank you.
Bleep Jamie.
we'll bleep that.
Cut that out. Anyways, we had met on the mountain. That was the first time we actually met in person, wasn't it?
Oddly, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I just thinking back to it, that was 2018.
Yep.
So we met each other and elk hunting, and you came and met, that's when you met my dad too. I forgot about that.
I think so.
Yeah, because he was there with me. It was his first time or second time elk hunting. And then, but did we meet because of Johnny, or did we just meet like through like social media or other mutual friends? I don't remember.
I remember it as you guys met through Johnny.
Yeah, probably so.
Okay.
Probably so. But we have interesting, like, aligned backgrounds, which is strange that we never did meet up prior to that.
Yeah.
But I think Johnny, maybe. Maybe so.
Yeah, because we were both safety professions and from Slippery Rock University.
Yep, yep.
So we both had that kind of align there. But you were, you know, you knew the Johnny Stewart, you know, way back in the day.
Yeah, he was my next door neighbor. Yeah. My whole life.
Man, I got to have Johnny tell the story because he'll probably tell it better than I do. But the story of when you and your brother would come home from college and you didn't live there anymore, but you wanted to stay there. So you'd stay at Johnny's house.
Yeah.
Is that how that went?
We'll probably have to reserve all the details. But yeah, basically we would spend some nights at Johnny's rather than go back to the parents' house, right?
Well, Johnny, you know, how he tells the story, it's hilarious.
Oh,
he's
my
like,
God.
He's like, I locked the doors so the Toomeys couldn't get in at night. he's like, because they, you know, he's like, he goes, I had to work in the morning and they're just up partying all night. And he's like, so they come in, he goes, one night I felt a foot on my chest while I'm sleeping. He's like,
my brother's coming in.
Yeah,
the window.
He was like, Chris's brother. Just open my window and Karani goes, hey, Johnny, your door was locked. You accidentally locked the doors. He's like, oh, it was on purpose.
Yeah. Yeah. He tells that one all the time.
Oh, yeah. I've heard it about 10 times, but it's great every time he tells it.
Yep.
Oh, man. Yeah. That's a good crew. I've got to meet a bunch of the people I grew up around you guys through Johnny's camp and stuff. I just roll around the ground laughing. That's for sure.
Too funny he is, man.
But then you were on again. For the Miriam's Turkey episode. Yep. And were you on again after that, or was that the last time?
I think so. I don't remember, Bo. Maybe I think that was it.
Yeah, I think
were we on again? Or I don't know. Maybe just two times. I don't know, Bo.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't remember the exact details, but I remember that obviously you were on a few different times there. But we've become buddies for, since really 2018 during that time. And then Kurt had moved out to Colorado and then you guys had met there and became, best buddies.
Yeah. We pretty much every weekend camp together or whatever, and which was going to lead into what our conversation goes into today. But it was, we had a good time.
Yeah. A lot of truck camping, every single weekend, huh?
Yeah. Lots of fishing.
Yep.
Yeah, which is just funny that how that worked out. And then, Kurt moved to Montana and you guys were still in Colorado. And then everybody moved back home.
Everybody moved home. Yeah,
everybody moved back to Pennsylvania. So here we are.
Here we are. Yeah.
In Pennsylvania together, which is pretty
good.
Wild.
It's good
about.
To be back, all of us.
Chris is one of, he holds a weird spot in my life where he's one of those friends of mine that has broke all these different spectrums for me. For example, like, I had a military life, I had a life in Colorado, a life in Montana, like all these different friend groups, but somehow, and the one here, obviously, and somehow Chris has broken all those spectrums, except the initial military one, but it's kind of like it's kind of weird in a sense, because you're used to seeing like one friend group in one area,
yeah,
and Chris just always would pop up.
But we were both we were both in the air refueling business.
Yep.
So
we were.
We had a lot of talk. A lot
you were
talk
the
about
Pittsburgh
there.
Wing, and I was. Yeah, that was another weird thing when I met him. It was an immediate, like, connector. Is I'm like, oh, you guys probably never heard of it. I was a boom operator in flight refueling, and your wife's like, my brother's a boom. And then there's only like 500 of us or something like that in the whole Air Force. So it was like, I was like, really? What's his name? I didn't know him, but then he was a machinist working on the 135s and everything. So. Yeah.
Yep. Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't. Okay. Maybe I did know that, but I didn't know. I knew you were in the military, but I didn't know that's kind of what you had done.
Yep. Exactly.
Huh. That's cool. But anyways, I wanted to do this podcast with both of you guys. I couldn't think of better people. I don't have that many friends, apparently, that are pretty good or like have had a lot of experience, I guess, truck camping. And that goes anywhere from, you know, fly fishing trips, that goes anywhere from hunting trips out west, whitetail hunts out of state, whatever. You know, when Chris, you and I have talked a lot about like gear and stuff for all types of camping, which I have a video I still haven't put out yet that you had sent for me of like your backcountry hunting setup. Everybody should laugh about this, but like when you see the videos I have, sometimes they come out late. Like, I just released a video of my buddy Kenny on logging cuts. We recorded that a year and a half ago. I just got around to editing it. I prioritize and execute. I'm basically Jocko, but, just kidding. But anyways, so we've talked a lot about, you know, gear, but also just like the styles of it. And when you have a lot of experience doing these types of things, you start finding what works for you and what doesn't. I really don't think there's one right or wrong way. And it's funny because all three of us have a different style of how we truck camp and like to do that on hunts. And I think it'd be kind of unique to talk about a little bit.
Yeah, but, for sure.
I kind of want to start it out with like, Chris, kind of talking about your background, when you started getting into like, you know, whether it be hunting or if it was fishing or whatever, but talk about like your experience with the beginning of going camping, essentially.
So that goes way back. So, I mean, we were doing standard like tent camping as kids, and I always had a passion for, you know, just being outside. But I think where the truck camping journey really happened was when I moved out west, and there was like an evolution of different types of truck camping. Really, I mean, completely based on just budgetary reasons. You know, I started off with like a simple canvas, what they called a soft topper.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just kind of like a collapsible type
cap
if you will, or a topper. And then we quickly grew out of that because it didn't have a lot of space. I mean, it worked fine. But then, you know, when COVID came around, my wife and I, you know, we got on Marketplace and we were really interested in upgrading to like an actual truck camper, like the old school slide in type camper. And we actually found one for a couple thousand bucks and remodeled it. So that was like a COVID project and really made it nice inside. But you know, some of those like older style slide in campers can be kind of heavy on a truck. So then the next evolution was like a newer upgraded model of a truck camper, like a four wheel camper is the brand that we use.
Yep.
And, you know, it kind of grew out of that because it took up our truck bed and our like utilitarian use of a pickup truck. Cause it's like, you know, a man door into the camper. And then finally, lastly, where we're at now is it's another four wheel camper type brand, but it actually sits on top of the bed rails like a topper, but pops up vertically. Similar to the configuration that you run. So it has been like a wild evolution of truck camping, but we really kind of over the years found out what we like and landed on a product that we can camp in, but still use the truck bed type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. Those four wheel campers, like the one, your second evolution that you had where you go in and it's got like walking into a camper essentially, but in a truck bed. And John Barklow has one, it's a four wheel camper. And another guy, when I was just out in Utah, had the same thing in their truck beds.
Yep.
And they were running it and like it a lot. Where I saw the problem with it is kind of what you said, is you can't really use it as a truck bed when it's in there. And you probably need some help to be able to get it out.
Yeah. So it's kind of an event to get it out of your truck bed. just for like listener sakes, like these things have jack mounts on all four corners, so you can like jack up the camper and drive out from underneath of it. But it's kind of like an event. It's not something you want to do all the time. But yeah, you're pretty much all in once you put that thing in there. It's not really a truck anymore. But I can tell you like the benefit side of that is it's completely laid out with amenities.
Yeah. You know,
it's pretty luxurious setup.
Yeah. No, I don't think I've checked out your newest model yet. I saw it on the back of your truck, and honestly, I just thought it was when we were at the Longbeard Invitational party there. I just thought it was the same one you had had, and then I think you showed me pictures of it and stuff, and we'll get some video and stuff to overlay it and some of the clips and stuff that go along this podcast.
Sure.
So you can be able to see it. But yeah, it was just super interesting to be able to see that style of it, and I like the idea how yours is now. You can kind of use it as a truck bed.
Yeah, totally.
Yep. But then it pops up to be able to have the sleeping quarters and everything.
But it doesn't like have, you know, like bent, like nice bench seating or like the cooktop and the fridge and the solar panels. And it's very basic in nature, like a cap. But the benefit is it still pops up, still has.
You still throw a deer in it.
Still throw a deer in it. Yeah, I got the deck system in it. So
okay.
That's where I keep a lot of the camping stuff that we can talk about eventually. Yeah. But. Yeah.
Okay. What about you, Kurt? What's kind of been like your evolution with car camping, your style for sleeping, like your vehicle, everything?
Right from the get-go, I mean, sleeping in the vehicle was just kind of, just did it. But it really changed, my evolution changed when my wife, Abby, started going with me. Because once you add another person to that, that adds not twice the amount of gear, but a lot of it. And kind of how I ended up building my system, which I'll get into later, was so that I could make it, because she didn't come with me all the time. But anyways, all of my camping has been out of my daily driver, which is a Toyota 4Runner. So it's not like I don't have a ton of space. I'm very limited, and I got to kind of keep that in mind when I'm doing it. And it's got to be able to convert fast, because if you have any major steps to want to go camping, you're going to talk yourself out of it. You got to kind of make it super easy and super quick to go to use. But Colorado is really, I mean, we were doing it, we were in New Jersey, we would come up to Pennsylvania and camp, but Colorado is where I really got my system dialed in, because we were living in Lakewood, which is like a Denver suburb, but very crowded, didn't have a yard or anything like that, so every weekend we camped. And that was, but in depending on what time we both got out of work, it was load the vehicle up, load the dog up, go. And adding a dog also adds some complexities.
Yeah,
because it went from me and Abby sleeping next to each other in the back of the 4Runner with a simple mattress pad and two sleeping bags to you had a 70-pound dog into the mix, and she wants to sleep where your pillows are. It's like, it's just too much for a 4Runner.
But, yeah. And what year 4Runner do you have?
It's a 2008, so a fourth gen.
Okay. Gotcha. No, and I guess, and then also, okay, so explain kind of where you went from there, like as far as you still sleeping in the vehicle.
Oh, yeah. So we went from, we tried a couple different things. First was sleep in the vehicle, obviously. Next, we just had a simple two-person tent. Then we went to a four-person for the dogs. That was okay. It worked. You can still do it, but like I'm a gearhead, so I just wanted more. I put an awning on the side of the 4Runner, and then I had one of the ARB tent attachments to the awning. So like four sidewalls. It was awesome. The only thing it sucked with was wind. And where we were camping a lot in those high basins and everything, the wind was bad. So it wasn't very comfortable. You thought it was going to go down a lot when it was windy. The other downside of it is like when we'd go with trips with Chris and Kate, you couldn't keep it at your campsite. So like every time you had to use your vehicle, you had to take down all of your camp. You know, so it was great to have, like later when we'd use a tent and that, it was awesome because then that would be our cook setup right next to the vehicle. But yeah, you had to take everything down to move your vehicle. So then we evolved further when we got into Montana. We started making that transition in Colorado, but when we got to Montana, I picked up a small 8x10, or my, no, 6x8 wall tent. So a real small 3-foot sidewalls. An old canvas handmade one that my buddy had picked up at a yard sale that I bought it off him. Has the galvanized metal frame and wood stove and everything. And that's what we kind of settled on. And that's where we're at now. And that worked really well for out west. I don't know how well it'll work here. with the floralists and everything, because out there it's like you don't deal with as much bugs. Everything's a lot drier. So I don't know how well that'll work here. I think we'll make it work. But that wall tent setup was, I mean,
That thing's cozy.
Oh my god! Especially you know, the wood stove, and like we had it set up so that it was just no matter what. I mean, a 4Runner's limited, so also like I'm not just limited to having the back of my 4Runner, but now we have two dogs, which take up. So we had to keep the seats up. So now I'm limited to that little bit of space behind the back seats and what's in front of the back seats on the floor. And we did have a big Cabela's dry bag that we put on the roof rack. And if we were hunting, we'd put a cooler on the trailer hitch rack. But for limited space, it was an awesome setup. Super comfortable.
Yeah.
And everybody was happy.
Have you ever wanted to have Levi Morgan, Andy May, Johnny Stewart, and others available at all times? Well, you can with Cyber Scout from Spartan Forge. Cyber Scout is like the ChatGPT for outdoors men and women. You can ask it any questions related to bow building, scouting, hunting, survival, and a whole lot more. I think you'll be impressed with how it responds. Cyber Scout is currently out now for a select group of early beta testers and will be available to the rest of you really soon. The entire app is a complete tool for planning your hunt with incredible aerial imagery mapping, journaling, deer prediction, and some of the most accurate and detailed weather data. Use the code EASTMEETSWEST to save 20%. And if you're still on the fence, give the 14-day free trial a chance at SpartanForge.ai. CVA has been America's number one selling muzzleloader brand for over a decade. Hunting with a muzzleloader opens up a ton of hunting opportunities across the U.S., and I've been using the Acura series. But they don't only make badass muzzleloaders. Their line of centerfire rifles are great quality and not terrible on the wallet. The Cascade short barrel is ideal for tight quarters, deer drives, and quick shots in the big woods. You can check out their line of muzzleloaders, rifles, and accessories for every season and every range at bpioutdoors.com/CVA. If you use the code EASTMEETSWEST10, you'll get 10% off of all CVA products, which includes rifles, muzzleloaders, and accessories.
I remember when we were bear hunting last year and I killed my bear. You showed up. Well, you were there at the beginning, and then you came that last weekend after you got out of work, and we got dumped on with like a foot and a half of snow. And I remember I was in that Seek Outside Courthouse wall tent, which is a cool wall tent because it's super light and packable, but it did not do well with wind, and it didn't do well with a lot of snow, and it sagged a lot and had problems. You were in that canvas thing with the wood stove in there. When you go inside it, it was very small, but it was just like cozy. Like felt like you were almost in a cabin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I think that's a really cool design for people doing like out of state rut hunts and stuff that is in colder weather. You know, be able to run that wood stove and be able to have it. And we'll get a little bit more into kind of like the strategy on things here in a minute, but I want to run through kind of my evolution and setup. So I started with just like popping up a tent outside a vehicle when that's how I kind of started with some of the out of state trips I'd do or camping trips. And then I bought, after I sold my old Jeep Cherokee that really couldn't go that far anyways, which that wasn't very big in the back, so it was hard to lay in it. You had to lay diagonal and you couldn't fit all your gear. Then I bought a Dodge Ram and the Ram Bourbon. And I had a 6.5-foot bed on it, and I put a cap on it that I had color match painted to it. And I just throw a mattress in the back, which worked great, except for I had to take all my gear out all the time to be able to sleep in it.
Sure.
And yeah, and it just was kind of a pain in the butt. It doesn't sound like it, but when you're in the moment and you have to get up and go hunting, you don't want to take all your totes, throw them back in there, you know, move your mattress around. Sometimes, you know, you either throw stuff on top of it or deflate it. And it was just kind of a pain in the butt to do day after day after day. And then I went from that to when I bought my Chevy, I put a cap on it again. I put a deck system in, and then I got my first rooftop tent, James Brood Evasion rooftop tent. And I got that used, and it was awesome. I mean, I love that. Rooftop tents changed the whole game for me as far as like level of comfort. I'm sure what you have, Chris, might even be, you know, a step above, but like having that ability, and I kind of used to make fun of people that had rooftop tents on their vehicle, like, what are you using that for? But man, you go and pop that thing up in a matter of a couple minutes and be able to sleep in it and have a nice pad. It was super nice. That system was actually really great for specifically hunting, having the deck system in there, having the cap on it and the rooftop tent. But what I didn't like about it was for the other parts of the year, it wasn't ideal as far as the space things to do quote unquote truck stuff. So that's when I eventually took the cap off and I put a Diamondback cover on so I could keep all my gear secure, waterproof, locked underneath it. And then I put Yakima Overhaul HD bars on top of it and then the rooftop tent. You can still put your coolers and stuff underneath it that don't really care about the weather, and you can throw that stuff up there, or just a waterproof bag and have it tied down essentially. But that was nice because I could pull that tent off pretty quick and then use my truck as a truck for the truck bed. And that's kind of what I went when I just recently bought a Toyota Tundra after the old heavy Chevy took a shit, for lack of better terms. And that was what I had put on it again, the Diamondback, the Yakima bars, but I upgraded my rooftop tent to a completely made in the USA Go Fast Campers rooftop tent V2, which is actually made for 4Runners. It's the exact length of a 4Runner roof. It's not typically done for trucks, but I like it. It's super long. It folds up and is it, what do you call it, clamshell design?
Clamshell, yeah.
Kind of goes up, but I can put that thing up in 30 seconds and take it down in 2 minutes by myself, which was even quicker than I could do with my James Baroud. And I love that ability to be able to do it. The rooftop tent things worked really well for me. Now, where I'll say some of the negatives with my setup is, and I also bought that awning off of Kurt in the room, which I haven't installed yet, but I plan on using at least the awning. I'm not sure about the room as much. But where the problem with that is you have to tear everything down every day to go move your truck to go camp. And Chris and I will talk about this, but when you don't have an external tent, you lose your camping spot. That's your placeholder.
That's right.
And so that's kind of a thing. And I'm actually getting a local fab shop that I'm buddies with is building an off-road trailer for me that I can use and put my rooftop tent on and everything and have that so I can park that and be able to like have that as my mobile, you know, setup. And then you pull in somewhere and then just go. What you get with a trailer though is you have an extra, you know, how many feet to transport and maneuverability, which this trailer has, you know, 33-inch tires and independent axles, and it's pretty freaking sick. So I'm excited to get to try that out. But that's kind of been my evolution with it.
One thing that made me think of too is with like having to tear down your system, one of the things that really, really bothered me about having that awning set up is that I was constantly thinking, like, what if something happens where there's an emergency and I need to use my vehicle right now? Like, because that would take me like 10 or 15 minutes to put everything away. Like, and that's the room and everything. And like the way I was thinking of it, I was like, I'm just going to run a knife down the end of that, cut it off and go. But like that bothered me. And that is a benefit of having something that's separate from your vehicle.
Sure.
Is if you do need it in something like that, where it is a very time sensitive thing.
Yep.
You can just get in and go. But
so I think what we just talked about, the way they categorize that is camp in, what I'm doing, camp on, what you're doing, and then camp out, what Kirk's doing. So that's like the three categories of truck camping: camp in, camp on, camp out.
Yeah.
And they all have plus and minuses, right? Like we all kind of described. So
yeah, no, you're exactly right. And I think it all comes down to the specific person and what
you're looking to do.
What you're looking to do. Like, for example, what I was saying, like I like to use my truck for truck stuff, and that's, you know, I just like to say that I'm not actually doing anything cool, but but you know, if you need a haul anything, you need to pick up a couch, you need to do whatever, like a lawnmower, like being able to use it, like that's, I like that ability to have the modular approach. But you lose a little bit with that approach specifically. But they all have their, yeah, they all have their plus and minuses, is I guess what we're getting at here.
Yeah. And what's interesting about this is that it's trending right now. But this has been going on since the 1970s.
Oh, yeah.
Like truck. Right
before that.
Truck.
I mean, the station wagon days, you know?
Well, like truck campers. You see like the old 79 F-150 with like an old truck camper.
Yeah.
So it's just really gaining in popularity. I think post-COVID, it like, you know, people getting out, trying to stay mobile, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's yeah, you're exactly right. I don't know. I geek out on it too.
Oh, like, absolutely.
I love like building a system and making it work. And that's why like anybody that's been listening to my stuff for a long time, I was like super against buying a brand new vehicle, and I still don't know if I'm a fan of it, but I kind of came down to a point where the used market to have a reliable vehicle to be able to travel me across the country was ridiculous. And, you know, for a few thousand dollars more, essentially I could be in a brand new vehicle, but I was like strategic on what I wanted to buy. And Kurt's been a big Toyota fan, and I'm not sitting here stroking Toyota because I haven't used one long enough. But anyway, I talked to is like Toyota's a reliable vehicle, kind of built for off-road, not meant for hauling a lot. Like one thing I need to do is install airbags on the back of my truck, because when I put heavy stuff in there, it sags.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know.
Yeah.
Look like a city slicker driving around with it, you know, dropping in the back and high in the front, and I don't love that. But I need to, I wanted to build this truck out, you know, for the best I could with the budget, because you can go crazy with it, you know. So, like, for me, it was like what I wanted to do was something that had ground clearance that I could go places, not so high that I can't get in a lot of places, or overhanging trees is a problem, you know, that. So, I was like, put a 3-inch lift on it, 35-inch BFG all terrains that were good, you know, on the road. I've had these tires on my last truck. And then also off-road, and then, you know, put some skid plates because I use it, and I end up going white in color so it doesn't show scratches as bad, because I just beat the living hell out of it in West Virginia already. But like just going through a bunch of crap. But I wanted to build something that was capable of going places. The last thing I want, and this is a topic for a different conversation, but is a winch, because I've always wanted a winch since I was a kid.
Yeah. Yeah, you need
that. That's pretty cool. Do you have a winch?
I don't, not on my truck, no.
There are times in Colorado where I wish I had a winch.
Yeah. I have like
and
other
felt a lot better if I did.
Recovery methods. Mm-hmm. But I think what you're saying though, Bo, is important, like, because like listeners might be thinking, why are we harping on this topic of like truck camping? There's this like huge, like we're one segment of camping, right? The truck camping world. But just to kind of frame up what we're talking about, there's this massive spectrum of camping, of tent camping all the way to like class A motorhomes. And what you're referring to is like why we're all interested in this is because of like mobility. Like with tent camping, you lose all this comfort. It's very mobile, but with motorhomes, they're not mobile at all. Like trying to get like a motorhome into a trailhead,
but they're
super comfortable, right?
Yeah.
So we find this like inverse correlation where we find ourselves right in the middle of this X of mobility and comfort, right? So we can four-wheel back into the BLM and have a comfortable setup. And that's really why we're focusing on like this.
Yeah.
It's like truck camping, right?
No, it's a good point to kind of define the why, because like, and the thing is, you know, and you can totally do it by just tossing up a bivy underneath your truck if you wanted to and camp and do that. But I'm going to be honest, like, the more hunting I do and the older I get, some luxuries are kind of nice to have when you're doing that.
You have to keep camping fun.
Yeah.
Like, I get it if you want to be like, because I looked at getting one of those, I think they're called canvas cutters for a little bit.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's awesome. But I'm like, what do I do when it rains and I want to cook dinner?
Yeah.
Like, just stand out in the rain and act tough and be miserable? Like,
and we use these things for everything.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I use it year round for fly fishing, kayaking, I mean, mountain biking, whatever. We're using that as, like we said, the vessel for adventure.
The vessel for adventure.
We talked about this earlier. Yeah. The vessel.
I know, but I wasn't letting everybody know we talked about it. I was acting like you just came up with it.
Oh, you wanted that. Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Cut that out. And no, so this, so no, like in reality, like, yeah, we're using it for hunting. But we could be pulled over on the side of the road up here on the creek we were just looking at and spend the weekend there, you know?
Yeah.
So being comfortable is important. We don't have to sleep in a tent, you know?
Yeah, and also if you have a family and you're trying to take, you know, your family out and stuff, adding some creature comforts is kind of nice. And I'll be honest, like, there's one thing, like, camping in the summertime is one thing. You know, you deal with heat, you deal with bugs, you can get away with a little bit less. You start doing some hunts in November, whether it's out west in the mountains or it's on a DIY rut hunt that you're going out of state to Ohio or wherever, having some, you know, comforts after you're hunting in 30 degree weather all day, to come back and have a setup that makes you feel comfortable and almost, you know, it's not home, but it, you know, gives you a little bit of that feeling. Makes you feel good. You know, like last year in West Virginia, I went down and hunted the rut by myself, and I set up my wall tent, that courthouse I was telling you about. And it was just like, you know, I brought a cot, you know, versus sleeping on the coal mine rocky ground and doing that, which was nice. But what I learned there was I just didn't think in the East Coast you'd have the winds like you do out west, but we got like 50 mile per hour winds, and I ended up blowing the tent half over on myself. And this, Kurt remembers this story, so he's probably laughing, but the stove pipe pulled out of my stove because the winds were so bad, and ripped a hole in the tent
in West Virginia.
And it filled my tent with smoke. Luckily, it was going out because I don't ever run the stove while I'm sleeping because I just worry about those things. And I was just getting ready for bed, and I was like holding down the tent, and I got up. I finally got everything in place, and then I just jumped up in my rooftop tent and slept the rest of the night because I knew that wasn't going anywhere.
Yeah.
But the reason why I had set that up was because I was driving to different spots to hunt, and I just – and I also wanted the wood stove. Wood stoves are pretty freaking nice on cold weather hunts.
To
be able to do. But, you know, we've kind of talked about a lot of the different types of, you know, ways to sleep and do everything. But I'm kind of interested to hear in, like, your setups on things you're bringing, how you're organizing it, and going through it. I think maybe, Kurt, let's start with you because you have a pretty dialed system.
Yeah.
I know for sure.
I love my system, too. So, like, it has been through a lot of iterations, but I think it's near its end. It'll never be at its end because I always want to improve it incrementally. But the one of the things I'll say, too, is nothing that I do has made any permanent modification to my vehicle. So my vehicle is still normal, and this means that anybody with any SUV, truck, whatever, can adapt this type of thing. But a couple things that I had to take into consideration, like I mentioned earlier, family. So wife, dogs. Sometimes all of them, sometimes just wife, sometimes just one dog, depending on whether we're bird hunting, whether she can get off work, all that kind of stuff. So I had to make my system, like, it has to be adaptable for what I'm doing. Because sometimes, like, if it's just me and Sage going out bird hunting, sometimes I don't want to set the wall tent up. Me and her just sleep in the back of the 4Runner. Or if it's me by myself, I'll do that because it's, like, just one less headache, less gear, all that kind of stuff, less preparation. So all of it has to go in there. So that gave me a couple different setups. So I have, like, and I mentioned it earlier, if you have to think too much or do too much before you go camping, you're not going to want to do it. So everything has to be quick. I have a toiletries, like, little box, little tote this big. I have a cook tote that's probably this big. And I have a...
Give some, like, relative dimensions for the people that aren't watching it.
Oh, so the toiletries one's probably like a 14, 16 inches long, maybe 8 inches wide by 6 inches tall. The cook one is smaller than, it's one of the Walmart Rubbermaid small totes. So it's like, I don't know, maybe 12 inches tall by 20 by 16. I don't know what the actual dimensions are, but not very big. Just has what you need in it. And I'll get into what's in each one. And then I have sleep system, like shelter, right? So, and with that, it's separated into two things. I have my old Army A bag or my Air Force Air A bag that has sleeping bag, sleeping pad, which I use a big memory foam thing that's cut in half. My wife has one side, I have the other. We both have our own little bags. And then my pillow. So no matter what, if I grab that bag, I know I at least have a pad, sleeping bag, and a pillow. And usually, if I'm going to my vehicle, then that's all I need. If I'm going to be in the wall tent, I grab my cot, too. So one extra thing. And if she's going, she grabs her cot and she grabs her bag. The toiletries bag, that has deodorant, toothpaste, all of your first aid stuff. So ibuprofen, Benadryl, wet wipes, toothbrush, toothpaste, I think I said, all that kind of stuff. Sunscreen, bug spray, all that. The stuff that you would forget because, like, I can't imagine anymore going camping and trying to think of every little thing. Like, it just would blow my mind, and I'd probably talk myself out of it. And then my cook setup has, it's a Stanley cook set. I can't recommend it enough, but it has all the pots nest inside of it. It has a frying pan, saucepan, and then like a big boil pot. So you can do everything from frying steaks to doing chili. I have an Everest camp stove.
By Camp Chef.
Yeah, by Camp Chef. So that one's separate. That is a separate thing you have to grab, but it's pretty, you remember that pretty easily. But inside that cook tote, I have the adapter to hook it up to that stove. I have two propane tanks, one that's hooked up to it. I have a thing of crazy salt for seasoning, because that's pretty much all we use. I had tried carrying a bunch of stuff, and only one we ever use is crazy salt. We have our sporks extra in case we're camping with somebody else that doesn't have forks and spoons. Like, I've tried the actual plates, and I'd like to cut down on garbage and stuff, but there's nothing that beats a stack of paper plates.
And just burning it.
Yeah, it's a fire starter, too. And yeah, and then you burn it when you're done. If you can have a fire, because we dealt with that a lot with fire restrictions out west, so you couldn't have a fire.
Well, I'm shooting a new bow this year, and I am pumped. After playing around with the buddy's Hoyt RX8, the smile on my face made the decision for me. The first thing I noticed with the new Hoyts were their extremely smooth draw cycles and the ability to adjust the back wall to make it rock solid like I prefer. I outfitted my own RX8 with the inline accessories that made installation extremely easy and balanced out the bow. My favorite accessory so far is a simple one. It's the Go Sticks 2.0 adjustable legs to make your bow like a tripod, but it doesn't interfere with any part of the bow or the limbs or anything like that. In addition, the integrated kickstand within the HBX Exact cams protect your string from excess wear when you put your cam into the dirt. Ground hunting or spot and stalk just got easier. If you want to experience what I'm talking about, head to your nearest Hoyt dealer and take a test drive yourself. You can learn more at Hoyt.com. The Mobile Hunters Expo is a consumer-based hunting show unlike any other. It provides an interactive learning experience where you can try all things mobile hunting and learn from the best in the business. Come experience an unbiased, community-based environment where you can improve your hunting skills and find the right equipment for your needs. I'll be speaking at the Nor'easter Show in Mannheim, Pennsylvania at Spooky Nook Sports from August 9th to 11th, 2024. So come check it out or either of the other shows in Michigan and Georgia. You can purchase tickets online at themobilehuntersexpo.com or grab tickets at the door. I'll see you there.
But that was, so I'm trying to think if there's anything else in there that I needed to touch on. Oh, cutting board and a knife. But other than that, it was pretty simple. Gloves to grab the pot and pan. Lighters. Have lighters everywhere because you're going to forget them and you're going to need them. But whenever we decide to go camping, because a lot of the times it would be, especially in Colorado, Chris would text me, like, he'd drop me a coordinate, and he'd say, hey, we're going to be here in 3 hours. You in? And I'd be like, I'd look at Abby, and I said, hey, you want to go camping tonight? She's like, yeah. I was like, yeah, we'll be there. And it's 2.5 hours away, and we'd still make the time, because we'd just grab everything, throw it in the vehicle, and go. The having that kind of setup, so no matter what I did, if I take the wall tent, that was good to go. If I wanted to put the wood stove in the wall tent, all the piping for the wood stove, lighters, kindling wood, every time I got back from a trip, I'd refill it with kindling, but all I had to do was grab that stove. It was a heavy, like, sportsman guide one, nothing special, but all I had to do was grab that, and I had everything I needed to start a fire. And I had all the parts and pieces, everything, so I didn't have to think about it. But that system was very adaptable. I could go between whether I'm sleeping by myself in the vehicle, setting the wall tent up for just me and the dog, or setting the wall tent up for both dogs and me and Abby. And one of the things that people don't think about a lot, I don't think unless you do it a lot, is how you pack it in your vehicle and how you unpack it. Like, me and Abby have such a system camping, and I wrote about it in a recent article I did for Free Range American on our antelope hunt, but when we pull into a camping spot, it's like we don't even really have to talk about, like, hey, grab that. Like, it's just, we know what's going on. We know how the stuff that we need first is on the top, like the tent poles and the frame are on top of everything. sleep mags and all that are the very bottom, because that's everything's got to be unpacked before we got to, like, cots are on top of the sleeping bags, because that's got to get set up before you grab your sleeping bags. And the way I think about that, now the way that's kind of evolved, is because you only set up camp so many times in the rain and spread your stuff out and get it wet before you realize you need a better system, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, once you have the tent up, then everything else can start coming out and it's going to start staying dry. But little things like that, after doing it so much, I don't know. I think last year, me and Abby spent, it was like 8 or 9 weekends. So what's that? 20 to 30 days in the wall tent, like 20 to 30 nights in the wall tent. So it was like, we got a lot of experience doing it, and it was every different weather condition, from us bear hunting, or we got a foot of snow, to being 100 degrees out in the plains hunting sharptail. So it was like, yeah, but our system worked for all of it.
Yeah, and I've learned a lot from you, because you had, you know, I've done it a decent amount, but mine's very certain seasonal, I guess, that I was doing it in the past and a lot. And it was just like, I didn't have a really good system. I didn't have that tote that you're talking about that had everything in it. And I was just like, I had a list that was decent, but I had to find everything. I spent half a day trying to go through my house and garage finding all the things I needed, and I'd have to pull it from different stuff that I'd use it for here and crossovers. And I understand, like, depending on budget, you can't have two of certain things, but if you can, that makes a whole nother world. Like, everything is like, this is my truck camping gear.
Yeah.
And having that ready, because I learned a lot from that. Because, like you said, you said it multiple times, if you don't have it, if you don't make it easy, you're not going to do it. Like,
and having that system, your checklist goes from having 40 things to grab to having 3-4 items. And
yeah.
Another thing, last thing I'll add about, and is in reference to food, and I actually learned this from Chris, is we had a running list on our phone, on our notes pad, that had what we'd get at the grocery store if we were going camping, like what we would get on our way out. And we had like a couple standard, like, menu items, I guess you would call it.
Sure.
So that, like, when we would go to leave, and we're like, okay, we got to stop by the grocery store and head on our way out. And our routine was always dinner for the first night. We'd get Jimmy John's on the way up Evergreen.
Rob's place,
yeah. We'd get Jimmy John's on the way out, and that's what we'd eat that first night, so we could cut down on cooking. And then we'd pick up like a dozen eggs. We'd pick up some of the old jalapeno cheese hot dogs.
Yep.
Instead of buns, because they crush, we'd grab little wraps. Like, just, but having a little list on our phone, so even the grocery store, we didn't have to waste time and think about it. We could stop in there, and it was like 3 or 4 minutes, basic items. Oh, and in that cook tote, you had your cooking oil and everything, too. So that was one less thing you could forget.
Mm-hmm.
But that was something I picked up from you, the food one.
Glad I made an influence on you, Kurt.
Yeah, no, that the food thing's interesting. Just to put a point on that, is because if you ever try to go camping, especially when you go with a group of people, it's like, oh, what do you want for food? I don't care. What do you want? It's like, oh my gosh, it's like this thing. And what I've also learned, especially on hunts, more so than specific camping trips, is a lot of times you get back at night, you don't want to spend all this time cooking and
not at all.
Sometimes you do. Yeah. But most of the time, you don't. And so it was like, I've looked at it, especially on hunts, I'll take a mix. I'll have dehydrated meals, so I'll have like my Heather's Choice meals that I'll have that I can have quick and easy. Or I was just talking to a guy, and man, I think it might have been Ryan Elder, a guy that I had talked to a while back. He had sent me a Mountain Buck Monday submission, but he's from North Carolina, and I just met him, and I'm going to get him on the podcast, but he was talking about when he goes on out-of-state hunts, where he'll make meals, freeze them in the bags, and then take it, and they just need to put it in the boiling water in it, and turns into food. And that's a really good option, so you don't have to break out the camp chef and dirty dishes, essentially, and go through that. So that was a really, really cool option, but I try to make it easy. Like, I prioritize. I love bacon and eggs. I like making breakfast. So, like, I'll have enough where I can do that half the time. You know, because there's some mornings you get up and you're tired already and you got low sleep, but you don't want to cook.
Mm-hmm.
So you might, you know, choose for the dehydrated meals or some bars or whatever to be able to do it. But, no, I think that's...
And if you're going with a group, we always did this. It was like, hey, you guys got tomorrow's dinner, we got tonight's.
Yeah, just be straightforward about it.
And then, like... we got today, we got tonight for dinner and tomorrow for breakfast. You guys got Saturday night dinner.
That's
Sunday breakfast.
Because, like, people want to be generous all the time, and you buy double of everything, you know. So it's good if you're camping with people just to say, hey, if you guys do this, we do that. Save some money.
Yeah.
Makes and it easy. one cook stove set up.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Just simplifies everything.
Sure.
Yeah. No, that, I think that definitely makes sense. Yeah, you can share gear as far as that goes. And honestly, after Kurt seeing your Camp Chef, your Everest, your two-burner stove, that's what kind of got me. That's what I ended up buying, but I bought the, I don't remember the specific model, but if you look it up, you'll be able to find it, but it's a Camp Chef where half of it's a griddle because I like doing eggs and bacon on that kind of style. And then there's a one burner on the other side.
Yeah.
And, that's a pretty nice setup. I've only used it twice now. So I don't have a ton of experience with it. Kurt was with me the first time that we did it and to be able to do it. And you know, traditionally, I carry a couple different spices, like for my, like, I try to keep it simple, but like, I really like that new stuff. They're actually a partner of the podcast now, but Better Backstrap makes the seasoning for venison stuff. And honestly, I use it for eggs, bacon. I do it every day. Like their garlic, the gun seasoned garlic, I just pour that on it and do it. Like, yeah. Oh, it's freaking great.
Yeah.
You can't beat garlic with anything. It's just always good. But like something that has some salt, pepper, and maybe a little bit of extra spice to it that seems to
keep it
kind of simple as far as that goes. Anything else, Kurt, you want to add there?
Yeah, one last thing for the cook kit, and I just thought of this, but we always kept a pound of coffee in there. Because that was something we'd always forget. And we had a little stainless steel percolator in there as well. But, like, always that, because coffee is, that's going to make your trip if you're a coffee drinker. We had tea bags in there and stuff too. But, like, just have a spare bag of coffee that sits in there all summer so that you don't have to think about that when you're going out the door too. But
did you, what was I going to ask you about? Oh, and the other thing, the thing that I think that, okay, maybe I'm speaking just for myself, but when you come home, you got to make sure you restock those things and know what you're out, because otherwise you come home, like me, I come home from camp and I'm like, I don't want to do anything more with it. You know, you just kind of shove it in the corner of deal. But I think there's something to be said by spending 30 minutes and either making a list of what you need and restocking it right away before you put it all the way away. If you have it at home and just restocking it, but that's, I think that's kind of important. What's your philosophy on that, Kurt?
We always set up everything so it would last the whole year. Like when I say I have seasoning in my cook tote, it's a thing like that size that, I mean, it's like 3 years old now. It's probably not good, but we still use it. It was always one of those things. The first camping trip of the season is when we'd kind of check everything and restock it. But coming home, another good point is when you have those systems, it's super easy to, like, we only had to bring the cook tote back inside because that was the only one that needed cleaned. Like, you just clean the pots and pans real quick, stack them back together, and in a half hour, you're less than that, actually. You're good to go.
Yeah.
But keeping your, I mean, obviously, we each had a clothing bag, you know, and that took longer to pack than anything else. And sometimes there's only like two or three t-shirts and whatever. But yeah, try to keep it so that you don't have to worry about restocking it.
Yeah.
That's what I would say. That's why I say a pound of coffee. That's going to last you many camping trips.
Yeah. What about you, Chris? What's your kind of setup look like for your gear and how you're taking it?
It's Kurt and I are kind of cut from the same thread in terms of readiness. Like, we have the same program for the most part, so I won't be like too redundant about the details, but the things that are a little bit different with my setup is, like, we've gotten it to the point where the only things that we need to pack for the trip is food in a cooler or clothes. And that's just about it, other than the kit that you need for the associated adventure, right? So the deck system has been pretty awesome for us. To your earlier point, I get kind of frantic with my activities and get like head down into them. And like, I hate cooking, like that's like a secondary thing. And like eating for like when, especially when I'm hunting or fishing. So like whenever it comes to like those activities, I'm like, yeah, let's get this over with. I'm not like a big like eater on like when we're out camping. But one thing that has made that easier is the whole right side of my deck system is a kitchen. So up in the front is a griddle style cooktop. I moved away from the Coleman stove style stuff, because, you know, it does require like pans and pots and stuff like that, where I just go full burner because I like cooking eggs and bacon and sausage,
yeah,
and just wipe it up. And then all through the back of it, associated with priority of use, you'll have one thing that I do is like I have like a tackle box like kind of thing with little containers with all these different seasonings in it. And that's a real nice way to keep things organized, screw tops.
Yeah.
And then you have the, like the big stuff at that, like the big containers at the house where you can refill them and then fold that up. And then, you know, the typical cutting board, your plates, whatever, all the cook stuff slides away and it's all done, over with. But in terms of the stuff that we got to pack up, again, thinking like from a priority perspective, like we keep our clothes towards the backside of the truck, like the tailgate, like our clean clothes, so we can access them. And then what we use is like a 6x6x16, like kind of packing cubes.
Okay.
Like if you're traveling, and we drop all of our like clothes in there and they stick underneath the bed rail, like my wife and I, and it's like super dialed out of the way. You know, you can change your clothes or whatever. And then we have a similar thing for dirty clothes, because that's always like an annoying thing whenever
it
you're
is.
Camping. And that gets everywhere. And it's like, where do you put it? And it's all like super dialed over there. You know, like I'm not going to like kind of repeat all the stuff that Kurt said. It's the same stuff. We use the deck boxes for like our camp smalls, like all those random things like cards and bug spray and first aid kit. Right in the deck box, drops into the left side. And then we generally keep about 4 foot of space for our associated adventure. You know, two nets, waders, boots, bags, fly rods, boom, shut it. And then that's it. Like, we're on our way. So really all we have is like putting our food together in a cooler. So, you know, like when you look at my setup, like when you go and look inside to the left, there's like a Goal Zero and a camper buddy heater. And then straight ahead above the cab of the truck is the bed system. So it's all there ready to go. And to like reiterate the point for the third time, like I think the biggest complaint about camping is like there's so much stuff you have to get ready. Like my truck is pointed towards wherever we're going and ready to go, you know. Just like throw the stuff in it, you know, your food.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense.
And that's what makes it exciting is like you don't have to, it doesn't have to be a big ordeal.
No, and honestly, it's fun to like be organized.
It is.
Like,
yeah.
Once you get that stuff dialed, I've learned it because I struggle with it, but like once I've learned how to do that, and even simple things like you're having a dirty bag with your clothes, like I do like that Mr. Ranch Mission Duffel that me and Kurt both have. The front end has like a dirty bag thing that you slide into it, and it takes up space in it. So as you remove clothes that you're wearing, they just go in and it filters in. And then The backside has a boot side of it. And I've had that for a lot. Did you have it first?
Yeah, I've had it for probably 7 or 8 years now.
Yeah.
And I used it when I was flying for the Air Force a bunch, traveling, because it's water resistant and all that. So out in the flight line, when we were flying, like rain, if it was raining, it didn't matter. And it works well for camp, but if I have to throw it on a roof rack, nothing's going to be soaked. I don't want to do that, but if I run out of space because I've filled everything up with meat or whatever, hopefully I had a successful hunt. But no, and one thing too, like this is with Chris's setup, and I can say this because I've camped with him a bunch, because his stuff's so dialed in, he's like the most fun person to camp with, him and Kate, because they always have like, they always bring something new to the table that's like, it's like can jam, like something the last thing you'd want to think of.
Staple.
Or what's the number one favorite camping tool that you bring out with you? I know it's my favorite, and I have one now that's in my car all the time.
Camping tool?
I guess camping entertainment. Slingshot.
Oh, slingshot, yeah. Oh, yeah,
for the people playing Can Jam, if you're not on deck, you're shooting the frisbee.
Yeah.
You got a piece of that.
You're out there with us.
Maybe not as relevant for hunting. It could be.
Well, I mean, it's a quiet form of entertainment.
Yeah, you're right.
No, I killed a blue grouse with a slingshot.
Did you?
Elk hunting, yeah.
Yeah, quiet way to get some camp meat.
Yeah, there's a grouse right above the tent, and I shot it with a slingshot. Worked out well. Right in the head.
Oh, that's really funny.
We'll put a picture up.
There we go. Okay, we'll
put proof. Jamie, put that up in the picture. Yeah.
But one other thing that so like when it comes to like hunting gear, when it comes to whitetail hunting, you know, you're thinking about scent a little bit, and you're thinking about camping, and it's like, okay, how do you mitigate scent? And mm-hmm. there's not a great way for it, but like I do carry the dude wipes, the unscented dude wipes, and I wipe down with that. But as far as my clothes, Sitka doesn't make it anymore, but they had that launch pad for a while. Do you know what I'm talking about,
yeah.
Chris?
Yep.
It like it held your bow in it, and it used the padding of your clothes as like the padding in it, and it folded up, and it had the thing that came out, so you get off your boots and step onto a nice clean pad and be able to do that. That's how I keep my base layers in one pocket, mid layers in another. And then my pants in one other, and then my other outer layer jackets in another pad. And I have that all together, slide that into my truck bed. And it's like, I have that, I pull it out, and it, you know, works great from that standpoint. And I put those little, you know, those little pine cone wafers in there.
Do you?
You know what I mean?
You wear one on your hat with a pin?
No, I don't. I don't do that, but I do put them in there because that's something like I felt like as a kid we did. Like you always
would you say that is like the secret to success?
100%. It's, if you want to kill big whitetails, you need
and for $9.99, we will sell you.
Yeah, maybe you need the East Meets West branded
pine cone.
That goes into
that's
Hunter's specialty.
HS Strut.
Yeah, HS or HS Strut. Yeah.
You'd have
to go through.
Yeah, the little brown case with the little, there's like four or five wafers that are in there.
You get a snort of that. That's straight deer.
They last forever.
That man. You smell that for the first time, you're like, oh, it's on.
Yeah, you know it's hunting season at that point.
Down at the bottom of the bag.
Yeah. And the thing is, I never put them back in the case. They're always just scattered in my clothes bags, and they still maintain the scent. They're amazing. I'll say for $9.95, they're pretty dang good to be able to do that. But I don't worry as much about like scent, especially if I'm on a trip and I'm not saying it doesn't matter because I do think it matters. But at that point, you know, you're not spending now or at this point, you know, a cheap hotel is $150 a night and you're going through it to be able to camp and be kind of in the game. Now, there's different places like I'm not going to get into all the regulations on camping, but certain places you can't stay. There's places like, you know, West Virginia, there's not a whole lot of campgrounds in a lot of the places that I'm hunting. And so it's hard to be able to do that. Luckily for me that I have now I have private land that I'm able to camp on and be able to stay on, but it's not as easy to be able to find that. But most places you can find campgrounds that you can, and if you don't have a big camper and need electrical hookups and all that stuff, you can pull off in national forest. You can pull off really anywhere.
Right. Two words that if you're going to go out or anywhere to camp in national forest that you need to learn, like Google searching to find camping spots, non-dispersed camping. That is like when you discover that, you realize there's so many more places to camp than what just shows up on the map. Because you'll see, like, you might see one campground at the end of this road, but then you, like, realize that it's legal to non-disperse camp. Like, this is if you're e-scouting, right? You might think that's the only place you can camp on that area, but you get out there or you Google it, and it'll say this whole road is non-dispersed camping. That opens up, like, 20 miles of just pull off the side of the road and set up a camp.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. What about, what about some other tools? Do you guys carry generators at all or anything like that to charge stuff or just anything? Does any of that stuff kind of come into your mix?
I run a Goal Zero.
Okay.
And the
like an inverter, like a power inverter. Is that what it is or what?
So the Goal Zero has 12 volt and 110. So it inverts to 110. So you can, you can have a standard USB cable, 110 cigarette lighter. So the idea, like a lot of times with that, is just to be able to charge your cell phone. If you're working or if you're doing, like in your case, maybe some video editing or whatever the case may be, just some minor electrical stuff, electronic stuff.
Do you like that Goal Zero one?
Yeah, for our current camper, it's great. The old one, we had two AGM batteries in series hooked up to solar. It was full blown setup, so you could run anything. But you know, for weekend trips and short trips, the Goal Zero is nice. Yeah, it works well. And then when you're driving, you can plug it into the truck and charge it up. So, I mean, it works fine.
Yeah.
Good enough.
No,
yeah.
No, that's good. I'd been looking. I haven't bought. I don't have anything like that right now. But I was looking at, man, I can't remember the company. I want to say it's something Jack. It's
Jackery.
Jackery.
Yeah.
The orange. I was looking there. They had on Amazon, they had the Prime Day sale this summer. And I was like really looking at it. They had a couple $100 off on them because they're not
product.
Cheap.
No.
You know, you're looking at $1,200 or something for them. But for me, I'd really love to be able to go on a trip and be able to work remotely. Although everyone thinks I just hunt for a living, that's not the case. You know, as far as you got to do work and be able to have a computer and power that up and, you know, and charge all your batteries and do that. And those looked really cool.
It'd be a great solution for that.
As an option.
Yeah.
You know, and I've also, to get real techie and, you know, 21st century, is like I've looked at even like getting the mobile Starlink or a cell booster or something that goes along with it so I can work on the road. And honestly, not just for people like me, anybody that works remote, you can get away with, like, say you go on an early season hunt and it's hot during the day. You know, if you're able to work remotely from a place and do that during the day and hunt in the evenings and the mornings, you know, if you have the ability to do that, I think that'd be a really cool option to be able to do it.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's where I think like a travel trailer or something would be real nice too. You know, Jason from Timber Ninja just bought a travel trailer that has like air conditioning and the pop out sides, and like it's like a toy hauler essentially. It's open space, but it pops out for beds and everything on it, and I'm like, that's pretty sweet.
Yeah absolutely.
You can go all in. Just depends on what you want to spend on it.
Sure.
I don't have a generator, but I just real quick want to add, I do heavily rely on a jump start pack, one that you can jump start your vehicle with, but also you can charge your phone, like, because they're big batteries. You can jump start your vehicle say a dozen times with it, but then you can charge your phone like who knows how many times with it because it's such a big battery. But me having an older vehicle, like, that's just gives me a little bit more insurance, especially when I'm out by myself.
You know, it's funny you say that, because like by the time this comes out, I'd already been to Alaska, and hopefully I'm still alive. But like the Uncharted, and there's a bunch of companies that make them, but they make those, they call it the Zeus, and it's the portable battery pack that jump starts vehicles. But I looked at it, it's like it'll charge your phone like 12 times.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'm taking three batteries in the backcountry, these portable chargers, to get that, where I could probably just take one big one and have that ability to be able to charge everything and probably save on weight too, and just not having all the different.
And that never leaves my vehicle. That stays in there
for
all
sure.
the time.
Yeah. I have one. I don't know what the brand is. When I was working in safety, that was one of the things we bought as a Christmas gift for everybody, was partially because I wanted one myself, but it was, you know,
like
one
emergency kit,
emergency battery jump start thing that can charge your phone or do anything. And I keep that in my vehicle. And once a year, I typically pull it out and charge it in case it like slowly drains or whatever. But that's a good option. Also, I carry one of those, Kurt, I think you have one too, a Goal Zero. You're the one who got me this Goal Zero lantern.
I don't have a Goal Zero lantern, but I have something similar.
Did you buy me that?
I did.
Okay.
And but I was thinking about that, because like the last time I used it was when the power went out for a day at our house a couple weeks ago, and like I pulled that thing out and that's what we had for light for a whole night. Like,
sweet,
worked great. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Another thing, like, make sure everything that you're getting is like compatible with itself. So like that charges on a USB port. So all of your battery packs. If your battery dies on your lantern, guess what? Just plug it into your phone charger. Yep. Or if you're truck camping, so turn your car on for a little bit, charge it. Make sure you have enough gas, obviously. But little things like that, which, I mean, I don't know if we want to touch on fuel storage.
Yeah, I mean, we can, yeah.
That's a pretty quick topic. Don't put your fuel can inside your vehicle. I've done that, and that's turned out bad.
Oh, yeah, because you're in an SUV.
So yeah, so like I filled up my fuel can. I came from Pennsylvania, did a road trip back, filled it up at like 2,000 feet, got up to like 12,000 feet to camp. And I was like, I was just smelling gas, like fumes. I didn't keep it in there all the time. I just would put it in there to go to point A to point B, right? I'm smelling fumes. So I get to the campsite, unload everything, and I'm like, I probably just need to vent my gas can. Didn't take it out of the vehicle for some reason. Cracked that lid and just, it was like, somebody was shooting a fire hose of gas inside the vehicle. It was so bad. I drove home that night because I was supposed to sleep in my vehicle that night. So I drove home with every window down, like the big one down in the back and everything. Yeah. Drove home like an hour and a half with my head out the window because I was getting lightheaded. I was like, I still don't think my brain's recovered from that one.
Yeah, that killed a couple
killed
brain
a lot
cells.
Of cells.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's so true.
Something, put it on the outside of your vehicle.
Yeah. Or in a truck bed.
Or in a truck bed.
Yeah, I keep mine in my truck better now. I talking about those overhaul HD bars by Yakima that I have on the Diamondback. I raised up my tent more this year when I put this new one on, enough that I can fit my gas can underneath it and basically secure it to the side walls of that or next to a cooler. Because before I'd have to put it in there, it never happened, but I was always worried about it spilling or like tipping over and covering the rest of your gear, your truck bed. So like having it stored outside, I just have one of the military surplus jerry cans essentially that are metal that you can lock to anything or whatever, and that works nice. So I put extra fuel in that because you get in some places, you know, not as much whitetail hunting, but more so when you're honestly even whitetail hunting, like in West Virginia where my lease is at and where I hunt, you have a long ways to go to a gas station and you're driving all around up there for a couple days and you're camping, and it's like you go through fuel pretty good, especially in my, you know, Tommy Tundra with getting 12 miles a gallon with 35s on it. Like, you go through fuel pretty quick. Having an extra 5-gallon can gives you that peace of mind when you have one last day and you're at a quarter tank and you need to, like, you want to get that last hunt in to be able to make it through to get back to the gas station. Or if you're just driving through the middle of nowhere, Wyoming, and there's no gas stations.
Yes.
Like remember, Kurt, when I was driving out to bear hunt and I came through Wyoming and I had the heavy Chevy at that point, and I filled up at the last gas station I saw, and I never saw another gas station until I was just about on E, and I ended up having to go to an Indian reservation to get gas.
65-mile-an-hour headwinds.
Yeah, exactly.
So watch your gas gauge.
Yeah, I was getting like 7.5 miles per gallon, dude.
You ran out of gas.
I ran out of gas once.
Did you?
Yeah, down on Raton Pass in New Mexico. My damn gas gauge looked like an RPM gauge. It was just like
snowing on Raton.
It was bad. We rode, my wife and I were riding the back of a rancher's truck full of logs. It's a story, boy. It's funny.
That is hilarious.
Save it for another time. But yeah, sure did.
Do you want to talk water storage?
Yeah.
Because like, I know that was one of those things that kind of blew my mind. That's the other thing that was a key to my system, and I know we all have similar systems, but before the standard was...
Chris, you want any more?
Sure.
The standard was buy a case of water before you go anywhere, you know? And now go on Amazon, and for like, I don't know how much, but you can get a 7-gallon jug of, like, empty jug to fill up with water each time, and 7 gallons will last you a really long time. But I think they're... When I bought mine, I think it was like $17, and we've used that for now 6 years, but it doesn't take up that much space, and filling that up before you go, like 7 gallons should last a family a whole weekend, one person probably 5-6 days. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I say that with, I'm washing my hands with that, I'm washing pots and pans out, refilling my Nalgene's every day. Like, it's... very, very beneficial to have that much water and to not have to worry about having water.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're in with water storage. So I have two separate water containers. I have one that I bought that looks like a jerry can, but it's plastic, military surplus one. I bought that because it looked cool. It kind of looked like my gas can. But the problem with it is it gets so heavy when you fill it up, and there's just a spigot on top. Trying to pour it into something like a Nalgene can be a little difficult.
Oh, yeah.
So then I went and bought a cheap one at Walmart that was just a plastic 5 or 6 gallon container that had a spigot on it. You just pull it to the edge of your tailgate, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
That was a lot nicer to be able to do. But I do take both those with me when I go on hunts. I fill them up. Even if I know there's water, it's just like having that backup, because you can go days without food, but you can't go days without water. So
yeah.
I don't know the exact stats on that, but that's something that I put a lot of emphasis with. And one thing that I think is a really cool tool that I have is Sawyer makes a filter that goes on to spigots. So I take it with me, especially when I'm going out west. A lot of times you can go to places where they'll let you fill up containers for horses.
Yeah.
Like on the back of restaurants, there was a place in Colorado that I saw people filling it up, and I asked, I was like, can you get water there? Like, yeah, we have a spigot back there for horses. You know, you can fill up your trailer. I'm like, okay. You know, I can fill up my jugs with clean water knowing that you're filtering it by just screwing this thing on to a spigot. And it just runs into your water jug versus, yeah. And I keep that in my truck at all times.
That's a really
flows
good.
At a decent rate.
Yeah, oh yeah, it flows like I not as fast.
You have to
as
adjust the pressure
would.
Back a little bit on the spigot to make not the
yeah
like,
yeah
blow it out.
Yeah, you don't want to
rip it
full bore yeah. open, but it
and know what kind of filter you have to know if it's going to be in freezing conditions. If it's going to ruin the filter or not, because
yeah.
if you're keeping it in your vehicle, that
I've ruined so many filters doing that.
Yeah,
I'm still running that original Katadyn Pro. I forget who makes it, but that
Katadyn
is that the brand?
Yeah.
I thought that was the model. So the Hiker Pro, I guess,
Hiker
is the model.
Pro, yep,
I'm still running that filter for everything.
Yeah, when I used to have what was the original one that I had the Platypus.
Yeah,
those things every hunt I have to throw it away because they'd freeze and go. My Sawyer one, knock on wood, has been great as far as like. I've had it where I forget to like throw it in my sleeping bag or keep it in my truck or something warm to insulate a little bit, and it's still working great. Yeah, because like I've had some of the Platypus ones just completely like break everything inside when they freeze up and they just won't flow.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, water's important. I was going to ask, this was a question I had in my mind all the way from a while back in this conversation, but what about showers? Have you done anything with that? And yes,
I roll dirty. I don't shower.
So I can tell you my wife's hot on the subject. She definitely wants to upgrade to something that does. We never had a camping setup that had a built-in shower. Now there are some homemade jobs. I don't know if you guys have seen this where they're using like 4 to 6 inch black PVC pipe on the top of
yeah.
their vehicles.
Use the sun to heat it up a little bit.
Yeah, so like naturally the sun heats it up, and then you just kind of hit it with like a air chuck, kind of like pressurize it type of deal, and then you kind of can have like an outdoor shower. So for, you know, probably like a western hunting application, that might be the jam. But like when it comes to whitetail hunting, you know, generally it's colder out.
Yeah,
you're not wanting to shower outside. Like, so like I'm like, if I'm doing an extended weekend or a weekend type of hunt, whitetail hunting, I'm most likely like just like wiping down with your Dude Wipes or those Clean Freak wipes, you know, the scentless stuff.
Such a good brand, Dude Wipes.
Dude Wipes, Clean Freak, great brands. Like, just
they're just an unscented wipe, but I'm going to buy the Dude Wipes every time, even if they cost a little more than the, you know, Dollar General
sure.
unscented wipes. I don't know. They just seem cooler.
Yeah.
When
it comes to whitetail hunting, I am one to shower, you know, fairly regularly, like maybe every couple of, generally every day. But,
yeah.
you know, if I'm staying in my truck, I could, you know, I like to hit the shower. Maybe 2 days I could do it in the truck or whatever. But I'm generally not yeah. doing a lot of truck camping whitetail hunting for an extended period.
Yeah. What I've learned with, so the trailer I'm getting built is going to have a shower built in with a spigot that has like a pump system on it and everything. So it's going to be a little bit over the top for having that. But the only time I
hot water?
No.
Okay. Just to clean up.
Just to clean up.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what I've found is like in Montana last year when it was 100 some degrees opening weekend hunting, like that's the time I want to shower.
Yeah.
Whitetail hunting. I have done 7 day trips where it's, I haven't done any longer than 7 days in like November cold weather, where, you know, I wasn't really showering. But what I found is a lot of these small towns have laundromats that have showers in them.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So like I usually plan it to drive in every 3 days and go put the quarters in the machine. The shower goes quick. So you can't be just messing around in there. You got to make sure that you're getting
yeah.
in and out.
Yep.
We did that in Idaho elk hunting, actually. Use the laundromat showers a couple times. And to be able to do that, or I'll like break it up where like if I'm going on a 7-8 day whitetail hunt, I may even put like 1 day out of that where I go and get a hotel or a motel
for sure.
and shower. Because like it – It does, especially when you're cold. Like, that's the biggest thing as far as, like, I'm not even worried about scent as much as it's nice to have that. And you can call me what you want for that, but it's nice to have.
Oh, dude, when I'm whitetail hunting, I'm normally staying somewhere when it's cold, you know, like, yeah. So I can shower up, you know.
Yeah.
But
I don't normally go long enough where I need a shower. Like, 3, 4, 5 days, wet wipes are fine for me.
Yeah.
When I'm by myself, my wife hasn't complained yet, but she's pretty tolerant from
Yeah. Yeah. No, that seems to help. But colder weather stuff, like the wet wipes, but also like a lot of whitetail hunt. I mean, you can sweat a lot hiking in, especially if you're, you know, going into a place and you got some elevation gain, you're setting up your stand and you're doing the whole thing, but like, I don't know. I try to like break it up a little bit. Like I did that in West Virginia one night that last trip, which I was sick too, so it felt nice to be in a hotel room, but like I booked a hotel one night to be able to break it up. But I mean, that saved me $800. Now think of, when you say that, it's like, okay, rooftop tent. You're getting expensive. Like,
you can't think too much about it.
Yeah.
You can't think too much about the cost savings. It's probably not in
you
the
could
long
justify
run.
Spending
if you're doing it a lot.
Yeah,
you can justify it in the long run. It's probably not a whole lot of cost savings,
but it is fun to just because it's like really you're just justifying something you want and you're gonna buy anyways, and it's like should I spend $2,000? I mean, I can save $150 by spending this $2,000 right now, or in the case of rooftop tent or camper, $4,000 to $10,000. But yeah, who knows? I mean, $150 a night, that adds up over time. In 20 years, I'll have paid that camper off and hotel.
Well, but with the rooftop tent thing, I will say, like, that Jeans Brood one I have, the retail price on that is $4,000. And I think it's the same thing with the Go Fast Campers one. And I had that other tent for 5 years. So, and it's still fine. Like, I'm giving, like, Justin, my camera guy, is going to be using it going forward. And he actually used it before. So it was someone else that was in the hunting industry that had it before. And he slept in it before I even got it, which was kind of a funny tale of events, how that worked out. And I didn't even know him at the time when I got it. But they do last a while, so you're able, maybe you can justify the price, but I wouldn't look at it as the only reason for doing that. Because if you're really pinching coins, you're probably gonna, you know, get a tent from Walmart and throw it up next to your truck. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. You will find problems, but
yeah,
you should get Mason on here to talk about his setup if you want to talk about pinching pennies.
Oh yeah.
The guy who's like, what, 6'2", 6'3", and sleeps in the front seat of his truck.
Yeah. And Mason, yeah, will kill anything that's out there. So, yeah, none of this stuff is necessary.
Yeah.
We're just talking about our ideal setups for mixing comfort with convenience, I guess, really, when it comes down to it.
Sure. Currently, we have some really nice setups. I mean,
yeah.
But where we started in this truck camping journey, like, for me, it was Facebook Marketplace. And like, I guess for listeners that may be intrigued about this whole concept, it's like, dude, get on Facebook Marketplace. You can buy a cap, one that like kind of pops up and gives you the ability to kind of sit up straight, a perfect truck camper for like $400. You know, that's a great option. Or, you know, even some of these older model actual truck campers that slide into your truck, you can find for $1,000, $2,000. They're older. But like Kate and I did, you know, you can fix them up and have a really nice rig for, I mean, anything. So,
yeah.
But we kind of had a progression to where we're at today. I mean, like you don't have anything.
You don't start out by building a $500,000 house. Like, even people that have that, like, no. You know, they start out in an apartment and you kind of go through this realm.
Yeah. Four-wheel camper, the product that I use, it's expensive.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a major progression, but I really enjoy seeing the people that are doing the DIY stuff. Like I did, you know,
yeah.
Like that's the cooler stuff to me, honestly, is like the,
like how you did when you remodeled it during COVID.
Yeah. Like that's sweet.
I like seeing those people that are taking those enclosed trailers and like modding them. There's quite a few people, guy I had on the podcast, not long ago, Paul, he was one that he just built something up, and he's really good with, welding and does that kind of stuff for a living and just like built this freaking sweet setup that would probably cost him $30,000 if he bought it off the shelf. And I don't know what he has into it, but not nearly that much, you know.
See, like, get creative, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's awesome.
And, I mean, like, how we kind of build our system, and what I'll recommend for people is, like, just to get started, pick one aspect of it and get it perfect. Like, we did that with our cook setup when we were in Colorado, so 4 or 5 years ago. We got it so good that now, I mean, the last couple of years, we haven't had to buy a single thing for our cook setup. Like, obviously, replace seasonings and stuff like that, but, like, pots and pans, we had it dialed in, all of that. So focus on one little aspect that'll translate to someday when you can afford one of those nicer toppers for your truck or whatever, all the stuff you already have works perfectly, you know, yeah. And it just plug and play.
Yeah.
Make it work across the board.
Yep. No, that's a good point. Like, you know, like looking at my setup, like it's definitely, it's higher in price and not probably not four-wheel camper style, but you know, Diamondback's not cheap, but again, it all depends on where you're at and what you're looking to do. Like the Diamondback is super great for everyday life, hunting, fishing, all that different stuff, keeping your stuff secure. That was one thing. I go to a lot of places. I sleep in some sketchy places sometimes. I want my stuff secured under there. That's how, you know, that's why I wanted something that looked like that is that style. And then the rooftop tent, it was like, okay. Through the progression of things is like, I want something comfortable that has a sleeping pad that's already in there, that I'm off the ground.
Yeah.
I don't have any bears climbing up there very often.
Yeah. And I mean, you can, it's important to note that you can do this on any budget.
Yeah.
Like you can, I'll come back to my setup, but it's like, I could take any of your listeners' vehicles. I don't care if they're driving a Toyota Corolla around. My system will fit in there and they could do exactly what I'm doing.
Yo, I had a Toyota Corolla once, 5-speed manual transmission.
Shit.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty cool. But but then the mice built a nest in the cabin air filter, and every time I turned the heat on, I get a headache,
aroma.
You know, yeah. I get that aroma and didn't realize that there was even a cabin air filter.
Sorry, did I say aroma? I meant ammonia.
Yeah. Yeah, but nonetheless, you're right. Like you can modify anything to go from being flat broke to being able to sleep out of a vehicle to having, you know, making $1 million a year and have a pretty sick setup. Like, I believe me, I'd love to have everything that's out there. My system is nowhere near that, but I built it over time. And, you know, over the last, 10 years since I've been traveling to hunt and do these things and camp, and like, some of the pieces I have are 10, 12 years old. And then other things are, you know, I bought this year, but it's like, it comes through a progression in time. You figure out what you value and what makes sense for that occasion. Like, I love dirt bagging it, backcountry, backhunt, you know, DIY, high country, backcountry hunt, throwing all the keywords in there. Like, I love doing that. But, like, I also like to be a little bit comfortable sometimes. And
I like
and
heavy
doing that.
Canvas wall tents is what I like. And having said that, I am doing a backpack hunt. I love backpacking and all that. But
oh, yeah. I mean,
I guess I have a question for both of you. Chris, I'll go to you first on this, but because these systems are like, it's no fun unless you're making them better each time. How do you track evolving your camping system? Because me personally, I keep notes on my phone. Like every time I'm out, like, this is what I want to change. I might not be able to afford it at that time, but I have it for later. But how do you do it?
Or what he does, he sells me stuff so then he can afford.
Yeah, I sell both stuff. The stuff that I don't
at retail. Find a fit,
like.
No, it's absolutely no different than you. My wife and I kind of debrief after we're done camping, and we're like, grocery, you know, gear. Like we might be out of batteries and something, or
yeah,
you know, various things. But we kind of have a running truck camping, and I'd be lost without my wife. Honestly, I mean, she has that thing so dialed in. When it comes to hunting season, I'm just a lucky guy.
Yeah.
Because the thing's so set up, you know. So she, like, for her to be comfortable in the situation, not to say she's not tough, but, like, she enjoys a nice camp setup. And, man, she's made it so nice. But
Andrew. I'll make sure Kate listens to this because that's pretty good, you know.
Dude, I'm not lying. She's a
rock star.
I'm a lucky guy to have somebody that wants to do that stuff, you know.
Me as well. I'll say when I'm camping with Abby, there's a definite difference in what my diet looks like when she's there and when it's just me. When she's there, it's like really nice meals. And when I'm there, it's like...
You're lucky if you got whiskey.
Yeah, I got whiskey and hot dogs. It's like... I forgot the buns. It's just... But I got a pan to cook it in because I had my cook set up right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I can understand that. It's like, it comes down to what you're looking for, what you're looking out of it, and where you're going, all those types of things. If you're mostly whitetail hunting, maybe some of the stuff that we talked about isn't as important, or maybe more of it is. Like, I just, on cold weather hunts, having some sort of warmth helps. And honestly, that can be sometimes just the truck, enough of like driving back to your camping spot. Like, yeah. That's one thing I learned when I was in West Virginia, was I was like so set on having the stove because it was going to be around freezing and, you know, it was going to get cold. But just me getting in the truck and driving back to my camping spot enough got me warmed up and feeling good enough. And you might sit in the truck for a little extra, maybe throw a little music on, you know, make yourself feel good. Maybe some like real sad country and when you're not having a good day. But you get through that, and then, you know, and then you have, if you have a good sleeping bag and stuff that keep you warm and wear your clothes, you know, like I mean, that's what comes down to, a good layering system. Like, I wear my clothes to bed. Like, I don't strip down and throw on my PJs that I'd wear normally. And I don't really wear clothes to bed, but, like I wouldn't throw a set of PJs on or separate set of clothes. Like, I just jump in with my gear that I spent this money on, or like that you spent this money on, and you have like, use that stuff to all work together and in this system and being able to do it. But it allows you to go to some really cool places. And man, I love truck camping. Like, that's my favorite style of hunting, because it does mix a little bit of convenience and having a little bit of those securities with still camping and getting to experience wild places.
Oh yeah.
While being extremely mobile.
Yes.
While being extremely mobile.
I'm looking forward to applying what I've learned out west, camping out west, and doing it out here in the east. Like, wall tent setups, you don't hear a lot of people doing wall tents, and I might find out why you don't hear that. But
yeah,
I'm looking forward to...
Don't burn hemlocks or pine branches in your wood stove. Remember that, Kurt?
Yeah, I remember that. I don't think I'll have that issue with mine, because I don't have a... actually, I do have a damper on mine.
Yeah.
But, no, I...
Do you want to elaborate on that? What happened? I don't remember if I ever told that on the podcast.
You did.
Before.
You told it on the last one that I was on with you about the piping.
I'm glad you remember.
Yeah, it's watch what you're burning. Make sure it's burning clean or burning hot enough. We were burning wet hemlock and it clogged up the. So that was a spark arrester.
Yeah, spark arrester.
So it, like a wire screen that kind of clogged up with soot and everything.
Creosote.
Yeah.
Yep.
But if you have a damper, you shouldn't have that issue.
Yeah. I clogged up creosote when Kurt and I were camping with Sage when she's a puppy. Oh, yeah. I just filled the tent with smoke. Yeah. And I can sleep through a hurricane. So I'm sleeping, choking, and Kurt wakes me up like, we got to get out of the tent. And it's like, just.
I look at Sage and she's like glued to the bottom of the. She's under the smoke line.
Yeah, I'm sitting there choking. Like, I probably would have died in there because I was just burning all this wet hemlock, and it was just like plugging. It plugged up the pipe almost solid.
Yeah, you got to be careful, man.
Can't do that.
Same thing with the buddy heaters. You know, obviously, anybody that's truck camping, make sure you're being safe about it, because carbon monoxide poisoning, right? So make sure you have cross ventilation, or, you know, don't sleep with it on. You know,
yeah.
Like, that's what I do. Is like, I cut the chill. In the evening, get in bed, and then you can reach over, shut it off.
Vent a window, and then have that, and then shut it off before you go to bed.
Yeah, and when you wake up in the morning, even more important, you're, you know, frozen solid or whatever. Well, not really, but it's cold out. You don't want to get out, right? So you just kick that heater on, heat up the space, then you're good to go.
Yeah.
My little buddy heater I guess it is a buddy heater. It's one of the ones you flip up, and it's a cooking surface, too. But I use it for ice fishing.
Yeah.
But... it heats our wall tent. We found that if it's not going to get below 40 degrees, that's all we need. We don't need a wood stove.
Just cut the chill.
Yeah, it just cuts the chill, and that breathable canvas will actually set it up underneath the wood stove vent, so it has a little bit of air. We don't leave it on all night either, but yeah, it's pretty nice warmth, heat.
Yeah. Well, do you guys think there's anything else you want to add, or?
No, I'll emphasize one more time, please make your stuff easy to pack, because then you'll camp a hell of a lot more. Like, even to our level in Colorado, we lived in this really small condo, and we had a storage thing down in our like joint garage that we shared with people. And if we would have kept all of our camping stuff down there, we would have not went as much as we did. Instead, we set up a dog crate underneath the stairs in the living room, covered it with a blanket, and all of our cooking stuff fit in that dog crate, so that it was like hand it to the next person out the door and it was going in the vehicle. But doing that, you're going to do it a hell of a lot more. So that's my advice. Build a system, have it quick to pack.
Chris, anything else you want to leave the listeners with?
No, I think we covered the key elements. I think, you know, storage, heat, sleeping system, and general organization, like that's really what you want to focus on. We covered it pretty well.
Cool.
I don't have anything else. I think we baked it pretty well.
Cool. Well, if you want to check out Kurt's stuff, as he's been on here before, but @Kurt_the_gunsmith on Instagram, his website, KurtTheGunsmith.com. Sign up for his email subscriber list there so you get some stuff you want to learn about rifles and guns and cool stuff that he finds information that's not on the internet by reading old books because he's a nerd. Also works for Spartan Forge doing the research stuff there. So if you have anything to bitch about there, I would recommend reaching out to Kurt.
Bill Thompson.
Yeah,
reaching out to Bill Thompson.
And then Chris Toomey Official on Instagram. Chris has some cool stuff up there and everything. It's been a pleasure to get to camp with you guys on some of these trips and do that. And I'm pumped that both you guys are back in Pennsylvania now. We can spend more time together. Chris, I expect to see you up at our camp, which I don't know if you've experienced our camp before, deer camp.
Just a tour.
I haven't seen it.
Are you giving a tour?
Gave him a tour last time.
You got to come up during hunting season and hang out with the vibe of it, and
preferably during one of the weeks of the rut, so you can see the energy that is
the bucks coming in.
Yeah. I haven't seen it in its proper element. So I'll be up in a couple months.
Yeah, you got to do that, and then also Johnny's camp. I'm sure you'll be there in Johnny's new hot tub that he built. So we could look at the deer hanging.
I'll be there tonight.
Oh, yeah, you're staying at Johnny's tonight, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that'd be great. But anything else you guys want to leave it with, or is that about it?
I think that's it.
No, it's good catching up, though.
Cool. Yeah,
thanks for having
guys.
Us.
I appreciate you coming up and chatting.
Broadcasting live from the East Meets West headquarters.
Headquarters here. And no, I did one with Johnny and my dad from right here. That'll come out before this. So you guys are
second.
Second.
Okay. Yeah.
First one tonight.
Okay.
All right. Thanks guys. Bo.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit eastmeetswesthunt.com, Facebook @EastMeetsWestOutdoors, and Instagram @EastMeetsWestHunt. If you enjoyed today's episode, please review and subscribe, and we'll catch you next time.